So, Corey, what's your April Fool's?
It's not an April Fool's. It's dead serious. I'm taking a vow of silence, and I will no longer be joking on the podcast.
Yeah.
Sad that times. Is a joke right there. You just told your
first whole
joke.
Thing is a joke.
What, are you a lawyer? Yeah. Don't question my vow of silence. I will stop talking eventually.
I doubt it.
Everyone stops talking eventually.
Yeah.
Oh, another lawyer in the house. What is with all these lawyers? The world's oldest profession, right? Oh, wait, no.
Dying?
Damn it, another joke.
The world's oldest profession
I'm sorry.
Is dying, though.
How about we have a joke jar and I have to pay like some Bitcoin every time there's a joke?
A whole Bitcoin, a whole Bitcoin. Yeah.
I said some Bitcoin.
Some
say
Bitcoin.
.0000000. All right, read that back. Ryan, are you the stenographer? Can you read that back?
I heard some Bitcoin, meaning multiple Bitcoins.
The jury of hackers.
Plural Bitcoin.
Permission to treat the co-host as hostile.
Let's go to chat for it.
That is actually the verdict. That is correct. I cannot afford to pay multiple Bitcoins every time I issue a joke, so that would be effectively keeping me from joking.
Yeah, that would have to be really good jokes, enough to be a comedian.
I'm reading the articles real quick.
Yeah, I have no idea what happened. Did anything bad happen?
There's a really cool worm that has a really cool name. I like it.
I heard something about the alphabet. I don't know what that was about.
My letters
or something.
What's the XYZ thing? What happened with that?
Examine your zipper.
The zipper company got hacked again.
Are you serious? Did they get hacked from the supply chain? They couldn't zip up
their own security.
Be careful with your Rekka hoodies. God. It uses the hacked zipper.
Supply chain attacks are everywhere these days. Oh man.
Was it a back door in the zipper?
Are we doing a full recall on those now?
If you zip it up backwards, it does not work. So.
Or did you guys already talk about that one? I don't know.
No, we didn't.
We haven't.
They got hit again?
No, they kind of jumped off the fact that I didn't use the wrong, you know.
Okay. Ralph's bringing up 6-month-old news on here. And
No.
It's like the cooking show where they cut to previous footage.
You'd never do that.
You got to keep them going.
Okay.
All right. Go for it.
Are we rolling the finger? You said okay, so authoritatively, Ryan.
Yeah, I know.
April Fools. There's really no news today.
Hold on.
This is it. We'll see you guys later.
Maybe do a countdown. Let's think about it.
All right, here we go. 3, 2, 1.
Hello, I'm Ralph. All right, Ralph.
You're talking about the news. Come on, you ruined it, man. This was my only chance.
You just move your lips and I'll say the word.
All right.
Hello and welcome to Black Hills Information Security talking about Florida. It's April 1st, 2024, and we're going to talk about MFA, Florida, and No Bandwidth, my favorite band. I love Bo's beard, and I wish I could go to sleep in it.
Well, we should have practiced, but I think we did okay.
Wow. Oh, my. Corey's on fire.
Let's talk about Darkula. Is that what it's called? Darkula?
Yeah, that's what it's called.
Is it a typo, or is it just actually called Darkula?
It's actually called Darkula, the fishing service. Yeah.
All right, so Darkula, new fishing as a service, FAS, I guess we're calling that, PHAS, uses 20,000 domains to spoof brands and steal credentials from Android and iPhone users in more than 100 countries. I didn't even know that many countries had email. They've been used against multiple services, including postal, financial, government, taxation departments, telcos, airlines, offering fraudsters over 200 templates. Someone uses Cherry MX Blues. One thing that makes the service stand out is that it approaches targets using the Rich Communication Services protocol. Does anyone know that protocol? What is that?
Yes.
That is supposed to be the successor for SMS.
Yeah.
It's supposed to replace it.
Apple just signed on to finally start using it.
Have you ever been in one of those group text messages and you know, somebody sends you a message and it's all grainy, like the photo looks really, really crappy? That's because it's using the old MMS system and you don't have a blue bubble. You know, it's kind
is of that why I can like things on Android now?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So anyway, this was the protocol meant to kind of like solve that problem, because obviously MMS or SMS wasn't really meant for like multimedia. So anyways,
Android did a workaround, and when any of the Apple people used to like it, they actually programmed it in so it would actually look like a like. They tried to like one up Apple, and then when you like it, they actually get like the whole message, like so and so liked this. So every time I would just like everything as an Android user.
Right now.
That was great.
Yeah. So I mean, like someone in chat said 20k domains. Now I feel like an amateur. I kind of feel the same way.
Could you imagine that monthly or the yearly bill?
That is true. I think a lot of them are maybe takeovers, or they're like compromised registrars or compromised, you know, registrar accounts. Right. Mm-hmm. Like criminals like to piggyback off of other criminals. They're not actually paying the bills. They're just stealing people's accounts.
So most of these domains are Corey's domains. He just for
they're my domains. Please tell me where to send the Bitcoin so I can get don't tase me dot bro back. Honestly, though, the legitimate thing to talk about, and I'm curious what other pen testers take, should we be like buying these services? Like, because that seems pretty sick.
How much did it say? How much did it cost? Yeah, that's what I want to know.
I don't know. Does anyone know how much it costs? It doesn't really say.
Have a sales slick, you know, like today only.
About I will say, yeah, I'll have to look on the old dark web. But it's pretty funny because looking at the phishing campaign that they screenshot, it looks straight off of my phone because I definitely got that exact message. Your package has arrived at the warehouse, but cannot be delivered. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, these look very familiar. I've gotten very similar messages, and I got one last week too. So, the other thing I wanted to, or go ahead. Sorry, Michael.
Well, all I was going to add is, so apparently in addition to RCS, I don't know if this is in addition to, or from the, based on the article, or if they're both similar, but it's using iMessage too. So one of the things the article mentioned was that iMessage, because it's end-to-end encrypted, allegedly, that makes them more difficult to block these messages. So if you have some kind of, you know, anything in between that's reading the messages and detecting that they are, you know, phishing, then it's more difficult to block them because they're encrypted.
Well, so the way those like blocking services work for iMessage is they actually on device. So when you get the message, it'll read the message and look for indicators, right, that it could be something like that. And then it'll put it to a spam, right, if you have like a third party app that does that. And then it reports that number, you know, into a database. So
yeah.
Does that work on iPhone too? Because I know at one time, I don't know if this the case, but I know at one time Apple didn't allow apps to read the text.
It definitely does, and it can read the message. You have to give it that permission, though. Like by default, it just can't read text messages, right? But you can give it that permission. And in fact, Apple integrated more of like a spam filter detection system into iOS, and so other apps can hook into that system just for doing that process.
Yeah, cool. I mean, there is the option in the actual iOS app, or the messages app, which is an iOS. To report as phishing. I don't know who's getting those reports, but it's there.
So what's interesting is this says Darkula employs modern technologies like JavaScript, React, Docker, and Harbor. So did they just build like a Kubernetes cluster and like offer that as a service but for phishing?
Yeah. Well, so that's the other question I was going to ask everyone is, do we need to talk about on the news when there's a large phishing campaign? Because it seems like that's just the boy who cried wolf, right? We're just like, hey, there was another phishing campaign, everyone. Well, I will say this one is interesting because it's phishing. It's FAS, which we love FAS because we say that now. And it's, you know,
wait, what
everyone
is FAS,
got
it. Corey, for what's FAS?
Phishing as a service, but for some reason it's not PASS. It's FAS.
Fast not, with no T, not fast.
Pass is already platform as a service, so we had to add. Fast. I'm on the committee for more acronyms.
More acronyms,
in,
got it. Yeah,
cybersecurity, because we just don't have enough. Yeah. You know, more acronyms. Like, let's just do a little better, everyone.
Does that mean that you're part of the committee?
We need to overload them too.
So does that mean are we getting a new committee now for acronyms as a service or
yes, please?
Yes. And Corey is the head of it now.
So I think that we're going to see more like attacking as a service or whatever, insert as a service for attacks, right? I think they're already out there, right? We have ransomware as a service, phishing. It's just going to continue on. I think we're going to have all of it.
So our good friend Jeff has a suggestion. It could be phishing at as a service, and then it's shortened to fat ass.
Yeah, I approve.
I will say, I do have to take a, brief, like, I'm going to left turn into the extreme grammatical pedantry thing that I do. So, fun fact about acronyms versus something called an initialisms. Acronyms are when you pronounce the word, like NASA, that's actually an acronym. But if you, like, DNS is not an acronym, it's an initialism. Because you say the letters instead of pronouncing the word. So
you just
there's a fun...
Okay,
nerd. Nerd,
yes.
You can't unknow that.
Corey, that is almost as nerdy as the difference between a constellation and an asterism.
I don't even... What is the difference? Is one the horoscope and one is a star?
No. An asterism is just a group of stars that you recognize. A constellation is an actual... officially recognized grouping of stars and identity, like Orion.
Okay, so you're saying Big Dipper is not a constellation, it's an asterism. Oh no, I'm gonna
we'll never find out.
You cut out. Wait, she's nodding.
Elon's minions launched a bunch of satellites, and there's always more interruptions right afterwards while they figure things out. Mm. But you pretty much nailed it. Big Dipper, asterism, Ursa Major, constellation. Well done.
My mind's
Bravo.
All jaded now.
Good to know. I'm going to go buy some FAS. I'll talk to you guys later. So, I mean, this is another attack. But there's been some MFA bombing that focuses on iOS users, I guess, or Apple users.
I thought this one was really interesting.
Yeah.
So this one is a password thing, right? So they got the password.
Yeah, they're flooding people's devices with password reset prompts. So like it's a built-in prompt that whenever you try and do a password reset, it's just you're getting a bunch of these popping up on your iPhone or your iPad. Okay. And the response is allow or don't allow. So they're relying on people to either get sick of it and say, okay, fine, allow, or not know what it is and that kind of thing. So I thought it was pretty cool because it's...
If you're a five-year-old on your iPad, do you know which one to use?
There you go.
You're just clicking buttons until it works again.
Yeah, it's like a legit prompt from Apple. You know, no spoofing for the attacker, no typos or suspicious URLs to alert
the user. Now Apple's going to have to come out with something. They already had to do like an extra device protection because people were stealing phones, right? As soon as they had unlocked and as soon as like you type in a PIN, you had access to everything. And now they have an extra protection. So if someone steals your phone and you're not at home, you won't do that. So now they're going to have an extra protection where like, I don't know, you have to... It has to look at your... I don't know what is going to happen.
Okay, but I got an idea. Remember the meme of like this person tried to unlock your iPhone? It's just like a dog or something. I think that's what they need to do. Make it so you have to scan a picture.
Oh, you have to scan your face? It's a picture of some guy.
And
you
it
know,
sends
from
the picture to
Russia.
The people. At least it could be funny. But if you're five and you see your dad's face pop up and it says this person tried to reset your account, you're like, okay, I accept. But if it's like a dog, you're like, also accept.
Or in your case, if it's a cat,
you got to know your target here. You can't just be sending these.
Absolutely,
that is not what the internet would do.
I mean, this is terrifying. Like this, I don't know. I really think about the way that iOS devices are deployed a lot of the times in like airport kiosks and like or like in a hotel chain. It's the meeting calendar or bridge. I just think of the ways that they're deployed and it's like, hey, accept or deny. You're like, I don't know. I guess deny. My default. Deny.
Corey's right. There's so many of those devices that are out there that don't have the device locked down and you can just grab the credentials right off of them. So, yeah.
Yeah. Who knows? I mean, this is I guess MFA fatigue is a thing and everyone has to live in this world of MFA fatigue. There is a CAPTCHA on the site from Apple. So I'm sure that couldn't be bypassed
anyway.
Oh, that
stops them every time.
Yeah, I'm sure they probably have a low severity pen test finding from 3 years ago that says CAPTCHA bypass possible, and they just never did anything about it.
Yes. I honestly, I wonder though how many people are just clicking it and they're like, it went away. And then their account gets down.
Like, I found the solution. You just click accept.
You're probably right though. There are probably a lot of people out there that just get fed up and click accept to make it go away without even bother thinking about it or calling anybody first.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Most people probably are just like, oh, this is some weird bug that's happening. Let me just click allow.
Right.
So, yeah.
So I have the Apple came out with this end-to-end device encryption key just a little while ago. And the way that it works is that your devices get kind of like onboarded. So I wonder if that would happen the same way, right? So if somebody else tried to log into your account, like your iCloud, for example, they can't see anything unless they bring on a device that can actually decrypt it, right? I wonder if that would work. That'd be interesting. Now I got to try. Hmm.
Yeah, so Nikki Freeze in chat says, I personally don't get MFA fatigue. I'm always happy to click accept, which then he says, as long as I'm the one requesting the access. Yeah, I think the idea here is, the idea with MFA fatigue is you can't read your notifications or do anything with your phone. It's essentially denial of service because it keeps repeatedly popping up, closing out all your other windows and saying, hey, click, do you want to allow this? Yes or no? Hey, do you want to allow this? Yes or no? And the attacker would just persistently keep doing that until you hit allow. Otherwise, it's essentially a denial of service on your phone. It's a little bit different with this built-in thing, like Michael mentioned. Since it's built-in, you can't just suppress. If it's coming from Okta, I, as a user, can say, okay, I'll just suppress all notifications from Okta, then I'm not worried about it. But if it's a built-in thing, how would you... You can't, like, it's essentially denial of service. I guess it's good. It's forcing people to go outside and look at trees and touch grass and all that stuff.
How dare you?
Exactly. Don't use your phone.
Exactly.
That's the solution.
That is actually the solution.
That's why
go analog. Yeah,
that's why I still use my flip phone. No, I'm just
kidding. In 2024, I know that's a alien concept to everybody, but there is this thing called the world out there. And there's other people that aren't behind a screen. You can actually, you know, see and poke them out there.
Lies.
Conspiracy.
I don't believe you.
he says that coming from the virtual world himself.
I know,
indeed.
Right?
Indeed.
Yeah.
All right, next
are you
week,
like
just
a Diablo
for you,
boss?
I'll sit out on my porch.
Yeah. I don't understand this concept, and I'm scared. Let's quick change topics. So anyone have any articles they are just chomping at the bit to talk about?
I mean, more Linksys routers being compromised.
Linksys routers exist.
Do people
still
buy Linksys router? Like, who owns a Linksys router? Like,
I don't know. I don't know, but the worm taking them over is called the moon.
The moon.
Mm. Why isn't it called?
I just feel like that's the coolest name ever. Like, oh, what worm is it? It's the moon worm. Like,
your router got mooned.
Your router got mooned.
It gets exploited.
Yeah. This is a constant one we always hear about, right? And it's just pretty much someone using a bunch of home routers as a proxy. 40,000 already infected, with 1,000 going up every day. There's more than just Linksys. There's Asus and stuff. And I believe the SANS Internet Storm Center had a little bit more information on the exact firmwares that are being attacked and everything like that. As me, every time I read one of these, I go and make sure that my routers are on auto update. And for some reason, they usually aren't, and I don't know why. But someone's probably already on it, to tell you the truth.
I will say, my router blipped the other day, and I was like, uh-oh. That's probably not good. And it came right back on, which is a little concerning.
Did you know what you should do is reset it to default password and username, so then you know it's secure.
It makes it easier to get in.
I don't set it to default. I just change it to admin, and no one ever knows. Like, because that's not the default password on it, and they don't guess that.
Well, they do now.
That's definitely some 3D chess you're playing with yourself there. You may have just checkmated yourself.
I think a lot of the Linksys routers like this, when you're like, who buys these old routers? And it's like, I see them constantly at small businesses where they're like, we just have to like provide wireless internet for like the three people that come in through here. So they're like, okay, cable modem, the cheapest router that we've had for like, that's 15 years old. It still works, whatever. And it's broadcasting the Wi-Fi that is insecure. So
they have like WSP or WPA, and it's bad, dude.
But you don't need to crack it, because it's like they have like the password to the router that's like just right.
Yeah, no, it's stuck to
the, it's stuck to the like the board behind, where it's like, you know, welcome to our yoga studio. Like, here's all the logins for admin purposes on everything.
I was at an anti-siphon training. I think this was the one in Baltimore. I think Ryan made the password and he wrote it down somewhere, but no one could figure out how to connect because the password was like something to do with like crustaceans or something, and no one could figure out how to spell crustaceans.
That's one way to do it. That wasn't my password, by the way, but that is one
way. I don't think I've asked this on here before, but what Soho routers do you guys actually recommend? Because I don't like mine anymore.
I mean, Unify stuff is good.
Yeah, Unify stuff.
What
is
the other one, Ralph, that you were talking about last week?
Not Ubiquiti, is it?
Firewalla makes some good products too. Those have come up a bunch of times too. From like, if you want to get into some other security stuff,
DIY Unify. PFSense setups, you can buy them on PFSense, Amazon.
OpenSense, OpenSense or whatever. Devices. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, dude, just get Unify. I like how all the good solutions. You're like, no, I don't want to do that. Okay, well then, nothing. Here's what. Okay, here's the good news. If you ever get in trouble for something and they say we have your IP, just say my router was compromised 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay, it's been on the dark web.
This Russian guy called me and told me to change my router password to this,
me.
And I did it.
I got hacked. Like, this works. Yes, is a great defense.
What I will tell you not to buy is a Fortinet because they're super expensive and they get hacked every week or something.
But I will admit, as a security analyst who used to have to look at Fortinet logs, they actually had like when a malware signature would hit, they had a link to that signature. You would like copy that link and throw it in a browser and it would tell you everything about it. That was the coolest thing, triaging alerts back then, but it's been a long time since I've seen a Fortinet to tell you the truth.
Good news is that the attackers will drop the event logs for you so you don't get that off.
Yes.
Or you can just fish someone by injecting a link.
Oh, that's a great job.
They're like threaded the old CTI watering hole attack. Classic.
All right.
Someone's dog is not happy about the podcast.
Yes, your dog is upset.
It's my dog. The deer in the neighborhood have been tormenting them. The deer in my neighborhood know that the dogs won't go past the fence, so they stand like 3 feet away and go nee, 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 nee. It's hilarious, but yeah, it's my dog.
Yeah, that's fun. Let's talk about digital signs that are gathering our data just for funsies.
This is an old trick.
Okay, first of all, I don't know what Brookline is. I want to get that out there first thing. I don't know what that is. I don't know where it is. Does anyone know where Brookline Village is?
Is it in New York, maybe?
All right, well, it's a flyover. We're calling it a flyover town because no one's ever heard of it. But there are digital signs scattered throughout this town. 7-foot electronic ink displays. They display black and white messages such as the town's official schedule, advertisements for businesses, bus schedules, and current weather. So like if you're standing outside looking at a sign wondering what the weather is, you should probably reconsider your life.
It's in Massachusetts.
Sorry.
Okay. Basically, they're a Wi-Fi. So they're doing like kind of the karma attack, right? Is that essentially what they're doing? They're gathering what phones, what Wi-Fi networks phones are searching for. This is like the oldest
trick
in the book.
They're gathering the MAC addresses of the phones, right?
This is an old trick, right?
But they're actually you like encrypting them or whatever they're doing to them and trying to make it at least
anonymizing.
A little bit private.
So the sign is collecting your Wi-Fi networks and encrypting them?
So
this your MAC address, which this is, okay. Well, I'm assuming Ralph's going to bring this up too, but fun fact about iPhones is they randomize your MAC address.
Yes, they randomize your MAC address per BSI ID. Android does this as well, okay? Because they caught onto this a while ago. Marketers and advertisers were doing this, you know, because your phone would probe out looking for a known SSID and your MAC address would be part of that. Now they randomize it. So every single BSSID that you connect to is a different MAC address. Now, it'll be the same one if you connect to the same BSID over and over again, but it will randomize it. So then it becomes significantly more difficult to see where you're going because you have a different ID all over.
I got to feel like this company that programmed this is realizing that it was not worth the effort because it's super meaningless data. Like the idea the company is trying to do is they're trying to say, here's how long people stood at the sign looking at our amazing thing that costs $7,000 or whatever. Mm-hmm. But really, like the logic has got to be a little bit questionable because, like, you know, the MAC addresses are randomized. They're like, wow, 50 people just walked up and looked at the sign. This is amazing. it's just one person with 50 different MAC addresses.
What I
don't see in this article is them using Bluetooth, which actually a lot of devices are using to identify different people, right? Bluetooth does send out IDs. It's a little bit more of a secure protocol, but as far as tracking, Bluetooth is one that is being currently used. So,
yeah, I mean, let's just say the developers at SUFA watched one too many episodes of Mr. Robot and, you know, just decided to put that in play. And really, you could have just used, multiple people have mentioned, wouldn't a proximity sensor do the same thing? Or maybe a camera or just a motion sensor, yeah. Maybe? Yeah.
Is this one of the first instances of this being out in like the public area? Because I think with like the cameras, I know stores do this,
yeah,
where they'll be able to tell that, hey, you spent like a lot of time.
That's
like,
why they want you to use their apps too.
Yeah, if you use their app, and I know there's stores that do this. If you're spending an inordinate amount of time looking at toothpaste, they're going to send you a coupon on their app for toothpaste. But that's within like the private store, to where you kind of go. It's not in that gray area. To where it's like, well, you kind of agreed by entering the store that you're going to be monitored by the store with like cameras, motion sensors, Bluetooth beaconing, etc.
Sure.
But this is out like in public at a bus stop, and it's like, well, I didn't consent to this. Like, I'm just walking down the street.
Yeah, I think it's funny that a CEO had to sit down and explain this when it's completely useless. Mm-hmm. It's like. Yeah. The CEO is smiling and explaining it and then saying, why did we do this? It's not worth it. But yeah,
they're going to get tricked like Uber did, where they had like the one guy that put like 60 cell phones in a wheelbarrow and just like, you know, moved them around. It was basically like, I would just want to like create like surge pricing, because it's like, oh, holy cow, there's like 15
one car
Uber right now.
Yeah. And create your own traffic jam.
You put them in a wagon and pull them around, and it's like, you have this you would inflate the surge pricing, and then somebody would come along and pick up that one rider and charge them like, you know. Yeah.
Let's decompress the next story.
Oh no.
Everyone knows what it is.
That is a zipper story.
Guys, you're so crooked.
Except for maybe Ryan.
I'm guessing it's this story.
Ryan's an expert. Yeah, so this one is a little scary. I thought it was kind of a taste of our own medicine moment, because we talk about supply chain attacks all the time on this show, right? But this one was like, it's too close to home and it's too soon. So basically, for those that don't know, someone put a backdoor in XZ, which XZ is a compression decompression algorithm, correct? It's like a, you know, you've got gzip, you've got xzip, you got zlib, you got 7zip, LZMA. There's a bunch of these like helper binaries for decompressing or compressing different formats, right?
Not algorithm. It's a utility.
Yeah, there's like a million memes around this. And it's mainly that like there's a huge project and there's this little tiny one maintained by like one guy, right?
Yes.
This is one of those projects, okay?
Yep.
Totally. Yeah. So basically certain versions of it between 5.6.0 and 5.6.1 had a backdoor in it. Does anyone know anything about the backdoor itself? Is it opening up a service? Is it calling back remotely? Oh, what is the actual malware?
Yeah, I dropped a kind of diagram in there.
I was looking for this exact thing.
Yeah.
But basically it's kind of complicated. So it's
complicated but elegant. Like
elegant. Yeah, like I kind of want to like go through and like look at it all myself, just because it's like kind of like you can tell someone spent a ton of time like going through this and making sure that it actually would get into the binary. But basically what it does is it doesn't just like add, you know, like your user to the machine or anything, but it basically like the way it hooks into systemd, it's basically like it's not an authentication bypass. It's more of like a RCE, like anything you send to it will be passed to like the system calls.
I'm trying to understand the stage one that's up on the screen, because disguising the malware as a corrupt file and then uncorrupting it is just,
right.
It's mind blowing, because it's like, and it's, I mean, granted, I'm not like an AV vendor. I would have more money. I'd be making like, you know, custom Pro Bowl commercials if I did, but like, how do you detect for that? It's like, it's a corrupt file. Like, how do you uncorrupt that file and go, okay, wait a minute, this is actually malware?
Well, that's why it's so difficult, right? Because you're putting something into like a repository that everyone can see. And even the maintainer of the repository gave the classic like looks good to me, and like push that code into it, because it basically what it looked like was a test case to where XZ would like uncompress it. Mm-hmm. And so the idea was that you would have all of the data for the actual backdoor in this like, you know, uncompressing like test case, which is just supposed to be like a bunch of random data. And then, but actually what happens once it gets built is they use this crazy like awk and sed stuff to basically change the data into the actual binary. And then that gets compiled.
So it's just a really good supply chain attack, essentially.
I think I was reading.
And I will say, I use Clam AV, so I'm sure I couldn't possibly be affected by this.
You're not going to be affected. Yeah. I was also reading, I guess they submitted like an issue with the project, and then this was part of the patch. Like the vulnerability was like part of the patch to fix the issue.
They fixed the real issue.
It was building up that trust over 2 years at least. Building up that trust. So first having that OSINT to basically like pick up that, hey, there's this package maintainer that they're having a hard time. They're struggling to, no, I mean, they were, and here's like kind of a OPSEC tip for developers, not victim blaming or anything, but it's like, if you are having issues keeping up to date on your packages, maybe don't drop that publicly. Like that, someone pick that up and they go, hey, you know, let me take this software maintenance off your hand. Let me be the maintainer, you know. And so they work that angle over the course of 2 years. There's also a fascinating article on the time zones that the commits were made from, and some errors in the commit times that point for this being like Eastern Europe when they're trying to make it look like it was coming from China. All sorts of fascinating things there to dig into, and the dates and everything kind of line up to if it was like the first commit was around February 22nd, 2022. And I think at that time, what was going on in Eastern Europe was all the buildup for the upcoming invasion of Ukraine. So,
well, people were also saying that basically just by looking at the like Git commit dates, they were keeping basically like regular office hours, which is interesting, because if it was just like, you know, some, you know, random person who is trying to get access to, you know, people's computers, they would probably not be doing it during, you know, normal business hours, and they wouldn't stick to a consistent schedule with all their commits.
So I do want to give a shout out to the guy who made that image, Frogger or Thomas, right? Yeah. He actually has a really good Thread Intel book that has very good graphics in it. So that,
as you'd imagine.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I mean, let's go through the classic supply chain stages of grief. Number one is, I don't have this problem because I never update.
You're out of date, so you're not vulnerable.
Yeah, I will say the period in which, yeah, it only would apply to people who are running the bleeding edge version and also multiple distributions. So like Debian, Kali, all the common distributions they do run latest versions of things. So if you apt-get upgraded, apt-get dist upgraded or whatever during the time when this package was in production, you would be affected.
Corey, there was different, it was like varying. In essence, if you pulled from the Git repository, then you would be affected, but the other actual OSs hadn't upgraded yet. They're kind of like behind depending on what version you're on, right? So like usually they only do like security fixes as opposed to bug fixes, and those, so there was only like a small subset of OS versions that were actually that had gotten like rolled into their releases, right.
So essentially people are saying in chat only Debian unstable is affected, Kali's bleeding edge, so that would be affected.
Kali rolling is just always just
Kali rolling too. Exactly.
I think that what's going to happen from this is like the reason that this was actually detected was someone at Microsoft was trying to troubleshoot why it was taking so long to log in with SSH. And that's how they discovered the backdoor. They're like, what the heck is going on? So I bet you in like the next month or so, there's going to be, you know, every like open source maintainer is probably looking at their code and being like, wait a minute, there was this weird file that was committed, but I thought it was just, you know, test data. So I wonder if, you know, there's going to be, you know, in the next month or so, people are going to come out and say, oh, by the way, this other, you know, package that literally everyone uses was backdoored, you know, 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Something like that.
I mean, we know supply chain attacks are common and we know they're hard to defend against because of the complexity that we're looking at right here. I mean, this is a great case study, but you know, the whole like layered multiple years, you know, there's so many things that went right for the attacker here. Although does anyone know if there was actually any like results, hacks from this? I mean, are they going after individual developers specifically? Are they going after companies? Because my thought is most companies aren't really using like bleeding edge, unstable things. Or do you think they just got really unlucky, spent 2 years setting up this attack, and then someone figured it out way sooner than they anticipated?
I think it was it got caught before it got into all the big like mainstream packages, but I think that was probably the target.
So we're safe today, but we all got lucky. I guess
we're safe for now for the thing that someone happened to find.
It's like a meteorite that just missed my house, and I'm like,
I guess we're lucky that it was open source, right? Because you know, in a closed source, it would be harder for this to be detected.
Although, I mean, for the like, would X tool detect this? Probably not, but you're likely going to hear that from a lot of vendors being like, we totally would have detected this.
I'm like, well, yes, they would now.
They would find it now. You're going to be able to find it. So they'll set up a demo and being like, look, here's somebody trying to do this thing and it detects it. Please give us more money. We need more Super Bowl ads.
Once you have the IOCs, it's even ClamAV will probably detect it. For real. Yeah.
You're good, Corey. You're good.
Yeah. The key is before that, you know, that's the key.
But I don't think this is the only developer that's been targeted like this. Like it probably has some sort of campaign of go out there and try to take over maintenance of software packages.
Totally.
Well, the question comes in is how many of this style of attack of the takeover the maintaining has happened? How much of this stuff now actually is backdoored, and how much would we be able to find? Has this been done before, and we just never realized it?
One thing that's kind of annoying, because I saw this when it first came out, and I was like, oh, like, whatever. And I kept seeing it over and over, and I was like, oh, let me go, like, look into this. Microsoft actually, or I guess GitHub, took down the XZ repository. So you can't even, I mean, there's other ways you can go and look at it, because people, like, basically cloned it. But, like, the official repository is, at least as of, like, a couple hours ago, it wasn't even up. So you can't go and like look into all that.
That's why I just use 7-zip, because I just know it's backdoored, and I consider that a feature. So,
but it's faster. It's faster.
It's worth the speed. I don't care.
It's worth the speed. Yeah, and the compression is really excellent. You know?
I played for WinRAR.
Yeah. All right. I don't know what kind of shoes y'all like, but apparently Vans got breached. So if you're cool, you probably got breached.
I literally just bought them like two weeks ago.
I love my Chucks, dude. They're amazing.
That's a different company.
That's not Vance.
See, this is a problem with Florida people. They don't actually own any shoes. They just have flip-flops.
Hey, come on, man. You'd have to tell everyone live.
You're like, oh, I know shoes. Remember the ones with the closed toes? No, I don't own any closed-toed shoes. I'm from Florida. I only have Crocs and flip-flops. I'm sorry, everyone. Yeah.
As long as you're not wearing those shoes that have the toes built into them, those things are not great. Yeah,
the Crocs. I saw Crocs that had toes built into them. I was like, wow, that's like next level.
The details are a little dicey, but essentially email, full name, phone number, billing, shipping, order history, total order value. So get ready for some fun spam messages about shoes.
Wow.
How much information would you give to Vans?
Yeah, I was like, you can lie to Vans when they ask you about stuff. Like, what's your email address? Like, make one of the custom ones that's a throwaway email address.
You wouldn't lie to your favorite shoe company.
What's your date of birth? It's like, I don't know, November 1996. Like,
how many people buy shoes online?
Oh, I do.
You buy your shoes online?
My feet are not growing, dude. I know my size.
I feel like shoes are just so like a size 9 in one place is not a size 9 in the other.
Dude,
like,
Amazon has a GPT for that. Don't worry.
Hey, do you know how hard it is to find a shoe store where you actually have someone help you get the shoes?
Not hard at all. I live in a city that has shoe stores and in malls. So I don't want anyone helping me.
I know where you. All right. I mean, I will say it was claimed by Alfie. So,
all right. So my real question: how did they get in? Does it say?
It doesn't say, but let's assume it was the normal LV stuff of, yeah, calling the old help desk saying my shoes don't fit. And no, that was a bad joke. I'm sorry. I would assume it was a high privilege employee that compromised and then they, you know, rolled to the environment. And to segue into the next story, they probably targeted ESXi servers.
No.
Worldwide Agenda Ransomware. Apparently that's the name of it. Sounds like a video game. So yeah, there's a new ransomware targeting specifically ESXi servers. Improved variant includes fileless injection, BYOVD, and more. So it's updated as of what, 2 years ago? Like that's none of that stuff is new. But yeah, it's written in Rust, so it's cool.
Oh man, they're hipster.
Memory safe.
It's funny because you know the words are just so bad. It's called Agenda, and then there was a version called New Agenda, and then there's now the newest one is called World Agenda. Or I'm sorry, Worldwide Agenda.
No, trust me. After Broadcom took over VMware, you're getting ransomware either way.
That's true. I mean, I guess I'm like, I don't, not to pull the why is this a news article thing, but like, doesn't every ransomware target ESXi? Like, isn't that just a standard TTP?
They should.
I just think about like, you know, ALF-V that we know they target ESXi. So keep close watch over your admin privileges, regularly update security products, perform scans and backup data. That's the recommended steps.
So I wonder if there's going to be any ransomware for like Proxmox.
Oh, that's going to be the next one on the hit list. I mean, like, think about it this way. Most of the time, the way that the ESXi attacks work is they use the same password for all of the devices.
All the root accounts.
Or another way is that maybe it is unpatched, right? Like they just haven't updated that ESXi box. So then they have an exploit. And then the final way is that they get access to vCenter, right? So, Active Directory is integrated, they get a privileged account. And when they access vCenter, then that's like kind of like all of the underlying infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And at that point, then they can, I mean, that's the best thing to ransomware, right? So, yeah.
So that is an interesting question. I really don't know. I mean, what do people use instead? I mean, there's cloud, so that's a big thing. I think a lot of organizations are probably moving away from on-prem self-hosted VM platforms in the first place. Yeah. I mean, there's Proxmox, is Zen still a thing? I mean, what else is out there?
Zen technically is a thing, but it's not like as big. There's Nutanix or whatever I'm pronouncing.
Yeah,
that
I feel like people have moved into these like medium-sized companies. Yeah, yeah. What is the other one?
There's Nutanix. A couple out there.
Cisco has some stuff, don't they?
I don't think Cisco does. I could be wrong. No. It's, I mean, Hyper-V, if you already have Windows licenses,
then you can Hyper-V, that's a big
deep
one.
Into that one. But yeah, I think for most small businesses, right, like that small to medium business, which has kind of like been the sweet spot for ESXi, they'll probably end up moving to Proxmox, I think, unless there's like a really, unless they're like kind of in the larger enterprise, and they might move to some of the other, products that are out there.
OpenStack? Is that still a thing or something like that? Like your self-hosted cloud type of thing?
Yeah, but that's like OpenStack's meant to like replicate AWS, for example, right? It's supposed to be like self-service for all of the services inside of a cloud provider, as opposed to like necessarily just VMs and... Mm.
I wonder if people are switching over, if they're going to switch over to, like you said, cloud stuff instead of saying, you know, let's go with Proxmox or something like that.
Yeah.
I feel like really nowadays, if whatever you're deploying, if it isn't supported by Terraform, you probably aren't deploying it. Like, that's just like a fact. So I don't know what VM platforms are supported. Does anyone know? I assume Proxmox is.
Well, I tried to use Terraform with Proxmox a few months ago, and... I did Terraform init and then Terraform apply and got a bunch of red stuff and never tried it again.
That was the supply chain attack that you're supposed to hit accept on your iPhone and then it goes through.
I've recently rolled out Proxmox with Terraform. It does work.
It was totally a user issue on my end.
Yeah. It
a skill issue, as they say, as the Gen Zs say.
But anyway,
the token zoomer.
As the token zoomer didn't say, and I somehow did.
Here, to the bigger point, as more companies roll into other products, let's say Proxmox becomes the next product in there, you will see more attacks moving that direction.
Yeah, Proxmox replied to you. I was surprised at how fast. That's good customer service right there.
This is why our Discord is the best. Join our Discord if you're not already in there. discord.gg/bhis. Yeah. I mean, yeah, like I think the other thing about this ESXi stuff is it's one of those like you're self-selecting. It's like the people who you put typos in your fishes so the dumb people click them. Same with this. If you have ESX, you're probably not patched. You probably reuse. No, I'm just kidding. But I do think there's a little bit of where there's smoke, there's fire, right? Like if you're heavily using ESX and it all has the same password, you're already probably a ripe target for ransomware to begin with. So, and the impact is going to be significant, right? It's like you hit the ESXi stuff. It's most likely crown jewels. No one's putting like only a dev environment inside of ESX. And then you're probably off to the races on a pretty decent ransomware payout. So I guess, I mean, the other question I have for people, I'm curious to get people's takes. What are people's thoughts on domain tied auth or not for, for ESX? Is it safer to go local? Do you go domain tied? Because, so, like, on one hand, if you compromise a high-level account, like, I don't know. It's a tough, I don't know.
What I think that's a good question, Corey, because think about it this way, right? Like, does your whole company need to log into vCenter, right?
No.
Like, and you're like, okay, hopefully. Well, I only let a group, special admins, special people can log in. But it's kind of like, is there only 10 special people? You could just make local accounts, right? Like,
right.
You know, you could separate them. And I think that comes down to, like, layered security, right? Whether you know, getting access to one account leads to everything, right? And when you deal with single sign-on, that, you know, could be the case.
Regulatory stuff for that, too. I would imagine you have to have a certain type of auths that then pull into this. We have to use this in order to use that. And then policy, red tape.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the chat is kind of agreeing with you. They're basically saying, like, use domain tied auth, but only like burner or, you know, break glass type accounts that have vaulted passwords, or use, you know, MFA. I'm sure getting ESXi set up working with TOTP based MFA is super easy and not a really painstaking process. My experience with ESX is anytime I open the command line, it just nukes a VM. So that's that's just my, I'm not VMware certified. It might have been the XE backdoor, but yeah, every time I try to mess around with the settings, I would nuke a VM and I'd be like, I guess I'm screwed. Thanks, ESXi.
Does Proxmox have like a thing? You know how like if you have VMware Workstation installed on your host, you can connect it to ESXi and it's like flawless. I don't have to really do anything. Does Proxmox have something like that?
No.
They have a web interface. So you don't need to do that in any way.
There's no like client side software.
But the client software and VMware is really nice. Like,
it's terrible. Are you kidding?
I've used it for so long, and then also trying to like maintain anti-siphon classes, right? Like that's what that's one of the main virtualization softwares that we use, at least we used to tell people to use. And just because it's just a little bit user friendly, back when it was free and stuff like that. But
there's a recent project that just came out. Now I'm going to have to find it. I can't remember the name. I just saw it on Twitter. But what they did is they took Proxmox and they used Terraform and Ansible. And what it is it deploys a dev lab for you. So it kind of deploys the Proxmox, and then you can say that you want a Windows lab and it will deploy it for you automatically.
Is it Ludus? Cool.
And it's designed for security testing.
I think it's Ludus.
There's so many. There's like, what is it? Snap Labs.
Is it Ludus?
It starts with an L.
I just saw it. It's a newer project and it has a little command line that you can do for just doing labs. It's really just so that when you want to test out that new Windows exploit and you don't want to, you know, set it up on another machine, this is kind of the idea. Right? So,
yeah.
Anyhow.
No, I mean, I think the VM platform thing is like always an ongoing evolving thing. It's like, well, VMware Workstation's easy for certain things, but then like cloud is easier for other things. And I don't know. There's not really like an easy solution.
And it is preference too. I really do agree with that.
I'm going to have to use that new VMware DSXi to Proxmox import here soon.
Yep, there it is.
Yeah, or I mean, Docker is good for certain things. I don't know. It's tough. There's a lot of different... I think we've kind of stratified the tools into different things. I think most companies are likely doing that as well. Of like, well, some things got moved to cloud, right? Some things got moved to Docker or other like CI/CD type stuff, you know. You probably don't have a lot of ESXi VMs that are building code anymore, right? You probably have, runners or other like burnable solutions, so to speak, that are building your code. I don't know. There's a lot of like movement of different products into different pieces. So I don't know. I would guess most organizations are moving away from like your ESXi type solutions, but I don't know. I could be wrong. I mean,
Graham keeps telling me to use Kubernetes, and I'm like, no,
go
way. I don't,
Kubernetes, I never go back.
Self-hosted Kube.
I will say, like, learning kind of the DevOps tools has been super, super helpful for like red teaming things, because it makes it super easy to like figure out how to get things in environments. So I kind of wish I had more like DevOps experience so I could like leverage that for pen testing.
Well, didn't you hear? I mean, nowadays the DevOps standard is just, if it works on your machine, just send me your machine.
So, I mean, that's what Vagrant is. Right?
That's Docker. Kubernetes is like, it works on our machines, so send me this, all of them, I guess.
Just give me a bunch of YAML and don't tell me what it does.
Yes.
There's no backdoors there. Don't mind this giant base64 encoded YAML blob called shellcode. It's fine. All right. Anyone have any final articles? We're getting close. We're getting into the 51 minute mark. The 10th hour. The 11th hour. Wait, how many hours are there in a day? The 23rd hour.
23rd hour.
This one's a little dark, but I like the Discord one by 404.
A little dark, eh?
A little dark. All right.
We kind of talked about this. Did we, in the past? Yeah. We've talked about these types of attacks. I don't know. Not this one specifically, but we've talked about using child CSAM or whatever you want to call it to essentially like cause someone else to be banned or canceled. I can't actually read this. I have to sign up for a free account, so I hate this website. So do you want to summarize it for us, Wade?
Pretty much it's like ban a Discord as a service, whatever that is. Someone make a cool acronym up for that one.
Badass?
But there you go. So they'll log into one of these Discord servers, and so one popular service at the digital underground, so Instagram, I guess, is a big thing for this, which I didn't know about, where people will do it for as low as $60. But now, since Discord is becoming more popular, they pay someone, they go into your Discord, drop a lot of this material, and then get it banned. It just sucks. You got to have such good local admins like that looking around and trying to stomp this out as quickly as possible. I'm wondering if Discord, I don't think Discord's released any like information on how often this happens, but I think it would be interesting to follow and to follow these people to see what else they start with doing with this. Yeah. Dude, as a blue teamer, this type of stuff is like my worst nightmare, just because I feel like if people are doing it to this, imagine if they're doing it to people. Right. If someone drops it on your computer, and hopefully you have a digital forensics guy who's good enough to be able to see that.
I mean, that's why. We've talked about this before, you know, sending people messages or emails or things like that, and like the on device versus cloud scanning. I mean, it's tough, like moderating a Discord. I mean, I'm sure the people in our chat can attest to this, but moderating a Discord can be a kind of an actual job. Like it's a lot of work, and I think there's a lot of unpaid volunteers, you know, out there running huge Discord communities and aren't going to be able to meet the demands of this. You know, it's like the whole content moderation on Facebook, or any content moderation task whatsoever is a really difficult thing to do, right? Content moderation is really hard, just as a general like job function, I guess. Like
it's hard. It's not at all glorious, and it is so. It's one of those things that when it's working right, people don't pay attention to it. And when all it takes is one failure and all of a sudden it's a huge discussion and people are freaking out. And, you know, and just big shout out to our nerd herders and the people. You guys do an awesome job, because I've had to take care of Discord servers myself. And as soon as they get busy, it's exponential, the amount of work that goes up.
This
is one of the reasons to point to, like, why do we not allow in Discord servers just blindly posting links, and they go, I just joined and I want to drop links, and it's like, yeah, you can't. Like, it's like, why? It's like, this is why. Like, these are some of the reasons why, like, the amount of things that show up in the mod log for people trying this type of stuff and getting it shut down, because we just don't allow links.
Yeah, I really wonder, like, what is the appeal process for Discord? If you've experienced that, please reach out and let us know, because I'm curious what that's like. You know, if your Discord gets banned, are you able to appeal that decision? A lot of tech companies don't have any appeals process or other like way of getting in chat. You can't just call up Discord and be like, hey, it's me. Our Discord got banned. Like, that's not the thing. So,
I know in video game realms right now, like with video game companies, it's an automated process that there is no appeal to anymore. Yeah.
Because of
the mass cheating and video games and things like that, like companies like Fortnite and things like that, when they ban you, there is no appeal and there is nobody you can reach out to appeal it. And they'll just basically say, sorry for your luck. I don't know if Discord or things like that are running on the same instance at this point, because it just seems like anytime you have a mass group of people anywhere, it's a case of we can't have nice things.
Yeah, I think Discord has done somewhat of a good job of allowing moderators to have control over what types of things can be posted and who can post what and in what channels and all that stuff. But I think it's like to give people an action they can take, make sure that your Discord is restricted, you know, like maybe don't allow people to post attached images at all, right? Or links or things like that. You can maybe restrict down what is allowed to be posted. Obviously, though, depending on, you know, if you have a channel called Share Your Battle Stations with Us or whatever, then it's tough to like have a channel like that, but no way to post images. It's like then the channel's pointless and it's a tough, usability versus locking.
The thing that I like is whenever you join a Discord, if you get like a level based on like how much you've interacted, right? So if you've sent like 10 messages, then now you're allowed to post like an image. If you sent like 50 messages, now you're allowed basically like a normal user where you can send any type of message you want. And that seems to cut down on it.
Yeah, you just have the low level bots aren't going to be able to navigate those. I mean, you could have a compromised user that wants to talk and chat and maybe spend some money in order to try and drop a link to something that's malicious, but cut down on stuff like that.
Totally. Yeah, I think that's basically what you'd have to do is lock down your Discord even more. Make sure that it's both time based, account reputation based, and also just like history of how much, you know, how many messages you've sent in the chat or that kind of thing. All right. Who wants to, I guess the last article, unless anyone has any things they'd prefer to discuss, should be the war on flippers. Let's give an update. The war on
flippers. So I don't know if you guys heard the update from the Canada war, but since you guys were gone last week, Canada actually issued saying that only qualified professionals can have flippers. So
are you a qualified professional?
Definitely am not. Definitely not. But I still have one. But
how
are they going to determine that, though?
They didn't state that. They're trying to figure that out right now. They're going to have a Flipper Plus that you go and take, and that certification is going to allow you to.
I already got F Plus.
Coming from EC Council, the new Flipper Plus certification.
You get Flipper Plus certified. Now, you guys joke, but there are some other companies that already have Flipper classes out there.
No, well, okay. Flipper classes are legit. I have seen a Flipper class at like my local DEF CON meeting. But I'm saying a Flipper Plus to order to buy the Flipper, like a certification, it's like getting your concealed weapons permit when you have to go take gun classes.
When Sans has a Flipper class. Dude.
Ralph, do you teach Flipper in your class?
No, I do not teach Flipper in my class.
I will say, if you do teach a wireless hacking course and you're not teaching Flipper, then you're probably doing it wrong because they're quite powerful devices.
Did we have the article for the Flipper, the student who got kicked out of school?
It is in there. We can pull it. Ryan can pull it up. But there's. This week, the war on Flipper significantly advanced into the United States. So it's getting real.
It's getting real. So the wild part is they said that he was using the Flipper to like disable the teacher's phone. I'm like, where the hell's that feature? How do you do this? Like, where's the manual?
It's probably the stupid Bluetooth thing.
Yeah, you're probably right. I was going to say, I got alleged of hacking the school's cameras one time.
Mm-hmm.
And allegedly, that is a key thing.
Never confirmed.
And I was also like the head of AV for our school. I personally knew. I'm like, those are fake cameras, and you're telling me I hacked them? Like, who told you that? Like, and it was like some stoners who got caught doing things, and they just said, "Oh, Wade hacked the camera," and then it was pretty funny. But I didn't see this school flipper one. I was talking about the Australian one. I'll find but...
it. Hold on. I got to go dig for the link. It's a deep, you've probably never heard of
deep,
it.
It's a deep link.
If you, I saw this.
It was high school. It was high school. Yeah, it was not it was college. High school.
I saw was he opening too. The doors?
No.
There was one where he was opening the doors. Okay.
But I found the article.
And he was like causing such a disturbance with the flipper that like even the students supposedly were telling him to get out of the class because it was ruining the whole thing. Right.
I posted, I posted the link. Essentially, this is in Utah. A teacher couldn't figure out why the electronics kept going out for a whole week straight. The class electronics were not working for the first hour. This resulted in a high level of frustration. As you can imagine, it's probably the IR off button that you can, a generic off button. This is built into the flipper on the in the default firmware. Their cell phone said that didn't work. Yeah, so essentially, it's just some kid being like, school's out. I'm canceling all the technology.
This reminds me of when I was in high school and like a more advanced version of this, when people would bring in like laser pointers and then everyone would, or someone would shine the laser pointer on the like whiteboard where they were teaching and the teacher would always see it, but they wouldn't ever be able to figure out who was doing it. This is like a more advanced, like high, like high tech yeah. version of that.
I mean, I guess it's, I mean, it's tough. I think it's one of those things of like, the, we all, I think everyone in this room probably has the story of how they got banned from computers in either high school or middle school or college.
I was never caught. Imagine getting caught.
I was never caught.
Okay, okay, allegedly. Fine. If you were never caught, that's a, another story. But yeah, either you distributed games. That was my personal. I was the kid with the flash drives, right?
Oh,
so you need some you games for study hall. I got you. I got you. Whatever it is. You had you, like every study hall is a LAN party when I'm around.
Oh, dude, that was the best.
But yeah, so that was my story. I think everyone has, it's tough because like it's ironic that the teacher with the technical knowledge could just cover up the IR sensor on the, you know, TV or something. Like there are like funny workarounds for it. Like it'd be funny to be, you know, but it's unfair to assume all teachers have advanced technical knowledge. I mean, I can barely get my microphone and camera to work half the time, so I can only imagine doing it in front of a bunch of high schoolers. But yeah, I mean, I think it's a tough thing. Tools will always be used for good and evil. It's just a fact.
Yeah, I mean, it was like either the TV be gone or like you programmed a universal remote somehow, and if you're doing pranks, then the cops get called. And now it's a whole technical news article because what? Like if you go back like 10 years and somebody was using a TV be gone to disrupt classes, like
or a clapper. You just put the clapper on the plug of the TV. This is like an 80s attack.
Wow. Those are like the rights of the 80s. Like,
yeah, wow. That's like how long have a clapper has existed? Those should be banned in Canada and Australia, don't you think?
Yeah.
It's almost the same word as flipper too, so it's bad.
You have to be an authorized user.
You have to be an advanced user. You can only clap in the safety of your own home.
You have to be certified for clapping now everywhere.
I mean, they're going to ban balloons because somebody put like a whoopee cushion on a teacher's chair. They're just going to be like balloons. You have to be an authorized user.
Well, hold on, because they so wait before we get too ahead of ourselves. They did the right thing, right? Which is they just said you can't do this and got the kid got in trouble. They didn't ban flippers.
Yeah,
like like in my opinion, if a kid is causing problems, you fix the kid, not the tool.
Right? I agree with that.
Well, that's a sensible thing.
Yeah,
and
they didn't say flippers are now contraband and we're going to scan everyone's backpacks for flippers or something.
We live in the age of overcorrection now, so that's impossible.
Well, so what I think is interesting about the flipper is they're taking it so much further than the capabilities of the flipper, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're like, oh, this thing's being used to steal cars left and right. Brand new ones, take it away.
Yeah, I mean, they're talking about like using it illegally by those who wouldn't normally have access to a business. Like, how are you breaking into businesses with a flipper?
Go to the Australian link.
Throwing it through the window, first of all. No,
go to the Australian link. Pretty much, they just said they found a flipper on someone that they arrested, right?
Oh,
but if you scroll down, there's an actual YouTube video. That guy looks like the Ask a Ninja guy, by the way. But Ask a Ninja to break into a car. And then they go into it. And this guy does not mention a flipper whatsoever. They're actually using
like, even the thumbnail of it, it's like he's got like a full-fledged laptop, and it's like,
they're now calling it just an international car theft tool. It's like, no, it's a
it's not.
What if we're all wrong? What if we're all wrong and the flippers, the people who make flipper are actually jailbaiting us right now, right? Mm. Putting all these articles everywhere. Flipper sales are out the roof.
It's marketing. I bet you. Campaign.
Like, it's total it's a marketing campaign.
Dude, I just it's sold like, my flipper like, for $7,000, man.
It's like getting that email that's like, Biden's going to ban assault rifles or whatever, and then everyone goes out and buys assault rifles.
Biden, if you thing. Say Biden's going to ban flippers, there's going to be a 10,000 flippers sold right now. Buy stock and flipper.
Oh my god, I mean, yeah, you can flip it. Yeah, it's fun how that the pendulum swings like the pendulum does, doesn't it? Yeah.
I'm gonna start offering Flipper as a service.
All I'm saying is,
I mean, I want the F plus.
Flipping houses is no longer the thing. It's flipping flippers.
I need. Yeah, there's no flipping burgers. It's just flipping flippers. Yeah, I mean, I think this is like, I don't know. I think it's an awareness thing of like, I can't wait until one of my friends asks me, "Do you have a flipper? Are you F plus certified?" No. Although I will say. I hope that the people at Flipper, who, by the way, the tools and everything is so amazing, like, and fun to use, like the games and all the, like, even just the like little utility you use to flash the firmware is so cool. Like, I love the fit and finish of all the Flipper stuff. They need to make like a license that you can print off with like your picture that says like, "I am a certified Flipper professional user" or whatever. And it's got like a little picture of like a dolphin or something. I don't know. Needs to happen.
They're gonna make like, the flipper grips illegal. Like that's too.
The new school for the new school for using flippers. Flipper U or F.
Yeah, that's a classic. That every 10 years or so, we get to find another way to pull it back.
Yes. All right. Well, I guess this podcast is sponsored by Black Hills Information Security. We know how to use flippers, so hire us.
Wow.
Yeah. Kill that shit with fire. Bye-bye.